Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran's foreign minister once again says Tehran has never sent weapons to either side of the Ukraine war in a bid to help end the conflict. Ukraine's army says it has recaptured over 1,000 square kilometers of land in its counterattack against Russian forces in the southern Kherson region. And North Korea says its recent missile exercises were in response to joint drills by the South and the U.S., adding there is no need for dialogue with enemies. Hello, welcome. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign minister has reiterated that Tehran has not provided any weapons to Russia to be used in the war in Ukraine. Hossein Amir Abdollahian says his country is against the arming of any sides and wants an end to the war. He made the remarks in a meeting with Poland's deputy foreign minister, Paweł Jabłonski. Tehran has time and again called on Russia and Ukraine to resolve their differences through dialogue. It says any kind of military aid to the conflicting sides would only cause a delay in restoring peace. The Ukrainian military recently accused Moscow of using Iranian-made drones. Recently, the Ukrainian government also announced downgrading diplomatic relations with Iran, citing similar pretext. Tehran expressed regret over the decision and advised Ukraine to avoid being influenced by those who are seeking to destroy the relations. Ukraine says it has retaken over 1,000 square kilometers of land in the southern Kherson region since launching a counteroffensive against Russian forces in late August. According to a military spokesman, Ukrainian forces are pressing ahead with advances on the Kherson front, but that a lot is needed to secure newly recaptured territories. Meanwhile, Russia said it had seen a considerable increase in Ukrainian attacks on its border regions in recent days. The strikes have concentrated on the Russian region of Belgorod, near the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv, as well as two other regions. According to Russia, more than 100 bombardments were recorded in 32 localities with the use of multiple rocket launchers, artillery, mortars, and drones in the past week. It said one person was killed and nearly a dozen buildings were destroyed in the Ukrainian strikes. Russian President Vladimir Putin has reacted to the huge blast that ripped through the bridge linking Russia and Crimea. He blamed Ukrainian terrorism.
There is no doubt this is an act of terrorism aimed at destroying Russia's critical civilian infrastructure. Its authors, perpetrators, and beneficiaries are the security services of Ukraine.
Putin made the remarks in a meeting with the head of Russia's investigative committee, who presented findings of an inquiry into the blast. The Kerch Bridge was partially damaged on Saturday by what Russian officials have described a truck bomb. It ignited a massive fire on the road and rail bridge, killing three people. Rail services and partial road traffic resumed hours after the blast. Ukraine has not claimed responsibility for the explosion, but a Ukrainian presidential advisor has said the explosion is the beginning and that everything illegal must be destroyed. The bridge was opened in 2018, 4 years after Crimea joined Russia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has personally guided and overseen recent exercises involving ballistic missiles by the country's nuclear tactical operation units. The state news agency says missile launches with mock nuclear warheads were in response to large-scale joint Navy drills by South Korea and the United States. It says Pyongyang wanted to demonstrate its readiness to hit and destroy enemy targets, including airfields and key ports at any time from any location. Kim has also been quoted as saying that he would boost the country's military might and that Pyongyang doesn't need any dialogue with adversaries. The country has launched 7 missiles in the last 2 weeks, including the one passing through Japan's airspace. The North says its launches are necessary countermeasures as it considers joint war games by the U.S., Japan, and South Korea a rehearsal for invasion. France's energy sector is hit by industrial unrest as workers are unhappy with wages amid inflation. A multinational integrated firm, Total Energy, says it would come to the negotiating table over annual pay if unions put an end to a blockade of refineries and storage facilities. The CGT union, which is the organizer of the strikes at the energy giant, says it's open to talks. The union has been pushing for a 10% hike in wages as Total Energy's profits have soared as a result of a spike in energy prices. More than 2 weeks have passed since the start of the walkouts, which have brought long queues at petrol stations nationwide. Three of Total Energy's refineries, as well as a fuel depot, are now blocked in France. The government has tapped into its strategic fuel reserves to resupply the drained pumps. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon says she is confident that a second independence referendum could take place in October next year, despite objections from the British government. Sturgeon made the comments in an interview during the annual Scottish National Party conference in Aberdeen. British Prime Minister Liz Truss has refused to grant permission for a referendum in Scotland. On Tuesday, Britain's Supreme Court will begin hearing arguments for allowing a secession vote without approval from Truss and her government. Sturgeon says whatever outcome of the vote, she and her party will not give up on Scotland's democracy.
If democracy is blocked, if the route by which it would be right to consider and decide this issue, which is a lawful constitutional referendum, is blocked by Westminster because they fear the democratic choice of the people of Scotland, then for me and for the SNP and for people who support independence, the choice is then simple. We put our case to people in an election or we give up on Scottish democracy. And, you know, I want to be very clear today, I will never, ever give up on Scottish democracy.
Sturgeon added that if the British government refuses to authorise a legal referendum, her party will use the next UK general election in 2024 as a proxy vote on Scottish independence. The first referendum on Scotland's independence took place in 2014, when 55% of Scots said no to the change in the status quo. However, Sturgeon says a majority of Scots are now in favour of independence. She says political and economic changes have taken place after the COVID pandemic and Britain's exit from the EU. Most Scots voted against Brexit in a 2016 referendum. A landslide in central Venezuela has left at least 25 people dead and more than 50 others missing. The tragedy happened near the capital, Caracas, after heavy rains since the early hours of Thursday caused the river to overflow. The flooding has caused enormous damage to infrastructure, with some areas reporting power cuts due to fallen trees. Authorities say around 1,000 people have joined the rescue efforts and are searching for the missing people. The landslide is said to be the biggest in 3 decades and the worst so far this year. In 1991, huge landslides killed some 10,000 people in the state of Vargas, north of Caracas. The U.S. calls it a new strategy of high-tech containment, but in essence, it's an effort to prevent China from advancing. In other words, a technological blockade. That's the U.S.'s way of flexing its muscle, similar to the way it imposes sanctions. And instead of welcoming competition, the U.S. is doing all it can to stop China. The product the U.S. is targeting, chips and not the edible one.
In the mid-90s, the U.S. was involved in the Cold War with the Soviet Union, but that was a nuclear arms race. Now, however, Washington is fighting another Cold War, with China this time, and in the digital space, a fight for technological superiority. In late August 2022, Washington restricted sales of high-end and sophisticated chips to China and Russia. Top chip designers based in the U.S. have even reported that they have been told to limit sales of their high-end chips. One of the manufacturers, NVIDIA, one of the largest graphical process unit makers in the world, has even revealed through an SEC filing that Washington fears there is a risk that the products may be used militarily in China and Russia. The U.S. says the restrictions are aimed at keeping advanced technologies out of the wrong hands. Meanwhile, China has slammed the restriction, stating that the U.S. is trying to impose a technological blockade. Beijing added that Washington aims to maintain its technological hegemony through the latest restrictions. The latest round of tensions between China and the U.S. could also present an explanation for Washington's increasing interest in Taiwan. The Biden administration has so far tried to further strengthen its ties with Taiwan, and this has been clearly demonstrated in many cases, the two most notable being top U.S. officials traveling there and Washington offering billions in subsidies to a Taiwanese company if it stops selling its advanced semiconductor chips to China. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, is the largest and most advanced chip manufacturing factory in the world. And Biden's push to stop the sales to Beijing only proves the U.S.'s aims that it seeks to impose a technological blockade and maintain or even strengthen its hegemony.
Chips and semiconductors are essential to current technology, including computers, military equipment, nuclear reactors, and weapons. And that's why the U.S. is targeting chips so that it can prevent China from advancing. But this is a form of economic and technological terrorism. The U.S. wants to cut China's access to certain semiconductor chips made anywhere in the world with U.S. tools.
The host of measures that Washington is taking to stop Beijing from getting its hands on high-end technology could amount to the biggest shift in U.S. policy on shipping technology to China since the 1990s. The expansion of U.S. powers to control exports of chips made with U.S. tools to China is based on a broadening of the so-called Foreign Direct Product Rule. This is the same principle that gave the U.S. authority to control the export of chips made overseas to Chinese telecoms giant Huawei Technologies, and later to stop the flow of semiconductors to Russia. But the question is whether this will be effective or will it backfire, similar to many other unilateral measures that the U.S. has taken over the past years. Some experts say Washington's move will set the Chinese back, but some, including top American officials in the U.S., say the unilateral controls being put into place will lose effectiveness over time, and the effort could backfire if other countries don't join Washington. The most recent U.S. blockade is aimed at preventing technology from being used by America's military rival. But these chips have a wide range of applications. Even if the blockade ends up being as effective as the U.S. wants it to be, it is only a matter of time before China begins manufacturing its own high-end chipsets, as well as semiconductors, and eventually becoming self-reliant.
People in Pakistan are joining fellow Muslims and other countries to celebrate the birth anniversary of the Prophet Muhammad. The occasion was marked by a host of events, including processions in the capital, Islamabad. Nasser Kazmi reports.
Thousands of Muslims have held a gathering in Pakistani capital Islamabad to celebrate the birth anniversary of Islam's holy Prophet Muhammad.
The occasion is one of the key festivities on the Islamic calendar and holds a special significance for the Muslims around the world. The same goes for the people of Pakistan, who are always excited about commemorating this day.
The participants in the ceremonies say that the day provides Muslims with a great opportunity to understand the teachings and the message of Prophet Muhammad.
Prophet's teachings are still resonating in the society. This is a time to remember and follow the teachings of our Prophet and his family, who dedicated their lives for the great cause of Islam.
This day reminds us of the message of the Holy Prophet. He teaches us to forget our differences and live in peace and harmony with a sense of brotherhood.
In Islamabad, many of the public and private buildings, as well as streets, markets, and mosques, are decorated with buntings and illuminated to mark the auspicious occasion. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
Large crowds filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to mark the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad. The celebration promoted Islamic unity against the various threats facing the Islamic world. Yusuf Mari reports from Sana'a.
Green flags reading, "We are here, O Prophet of God," decorated the capital Sana'a to mark Prophet Muhammad's birth. Those who attended said this year's celebration is of high significance, given the perilous times Yemen and the rest of the Muslim world are experiencing. Some participants argued that there is a war being waged against the message of Prophet Muhammad and those who follow him.
We are here to send a message to the world and our enemies that our Islamic nation will never abandon our beloved Prophet and that we will always follow his path and the examples of our leaders from the Prophet's household.
The leader of Ansarullah, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, also addressed the nation, calling for Islamic unity and adherence to the holy book of Quran and the message of Islam in an effort to improve the Muslim world. He condemned those who are in favor of normalizing ties with Israel and deemed them as traitors of Allah and His Messenger. Al-Houthi also called on the West to end their animosity towards God and all of His messengers. The Ansarullah leader also called on the Saudi-led coalition to end their war on Yemen, while also renewing his call to Yemenis to continue their resistance. The birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad comes 1 week after the ceasefire between Yemen and Saudi Arabia officially ended, without reaching an agreement to end the war. Since then, Yemen's Ansarullah movement has sent numerous warnings to Saudi Arabia and the UAE to end the war and lift the blockade, or else face, quote, unprecedented consequences.
While millions of Yemenis take to the streets to commemorate the birth anniversary of God's final messenger, the message being delivered here is that the Maulid is not only a day of celebration, it is also a day of resistance against the decades of Western neocolonialism aimed at dominating Yemen and the rest of the Muslim world. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Unity Week. Reminder of the birth of the Prophet of Mercy. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. We are in the Unity Week. The Unity Week starts from the 12th and ends on the 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal. It was Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, who named this period as the Unity Week to unite Sunni and Shia Muslims. The Sunnis believe that the 12th of this month is the birthday of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, while Shias maintain that the Prophet was born on the 17th of the month of Rabiul Awwal. Stay tuned for the first part of this special series on this occasion. Everyone needs a perfect and sure role model to reach sublimity and lofty moral virtues. According to the Quranic ayahs, the best role model is the messenger of mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. No doubt, following him will help us achieve true life. The Prophet of Islam was not negligent of God's remembrance even for a single moment. It is narrated that when he stood for prayer, his face would change and there would be heard a sound from his chest and throat like that of scared people. The Prophet's wife said, "When we were speaking with the Messenger of God, as soon as the time of prayer arrived, he would change in a way as if he hadn't known us." God addresses the Prophet in ayahs 162 and 163 of Surah An'am of the Noble Quran, saying, Say, indeed my prayer and my worship, my life and my death are for the sake of Allah, the Lord of all the worlds. He has no partner, and this I have been recommended, and I am the first of those who submit to Allah. God makes it clear that the element of the Prophet's success is that he was lenient, tolerant, and kind-hearted. He was not aggressive toward masses. In ayah 159 of Surah Ali Imran, we read, "It is by Allah's mercy that you are gentle to them. And had you been harsh and hard-heartened, surely they would have scattered from around you." Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "The hearts of the righteous were absorbed toward him. The locks were gazed at him. God buried all grudges by him, extinguished the burning flames of enmity, brought hearts close to each other, and made people brothers of one another." Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, used to behave people in a way that their personality was respected. It is narrated that when a person came to the Prophet, he would never look down upon him and would never allow others to humiliate him either. He would give him the best part of his house. If he had a guest who had no mat to sit, he would spread his abaya for him to sit on. Famous historian Ibn Mas'ud writes, "One day a man was speaking with the Prophet, but he was shivering as the awe of the Prophet had impressed him. The Prophet noticed the matter, so he told the man, 'Take it easy, my brother. Feel at home. I am not a king.'" History bears witness that the Prophet of Islam lived the life of the lowest strata in the society. According to some narrations, he would avoid eating wheat bread as it was not accessible for most of the people at that time. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, said, "The Messenger of God never ate wheat bread and never ate barley bread fully." Dear listeners, barley bread and dates were the Prophet's usual food. He used to darn his garment and shoes. Although he had a simple way of living, he considered wealth as necessary for society and economy. He said, "Legitimately gained wealth is so good for a righteous man." Another aspect of the Prophet's simple way of living was that he never allowed his gathering to have high and low positions. He would make his companions sit in a circle so that everyone was equal. His close companion, Abu Zar Ghifari, said, "The Prophet used to sit among his companions without any privilege, so that if a newcomer came, he could not recognize the Prophet unless he asked. Later on, he allowed us to build a platform for him from stone and mud so that he would sit on it and we would encircle him. Consulting others is one of the important orders that have been mentioned in the Noble Quran. It is so important that God tells the Prophet in Ayah 159 of Surah Al-Imran, "And consult them in the affairs, and once you are resolved, put your trust in Allah." For sure, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the absolute intellect and was not in need of anyone. Yet, through consultation, he pursued two goals. First, he wanted to hold his companions in great esteem. And secondly, he taught others to shun egotism and dictatorship. At the end of this episode, we congratulate the Prophet's birthday and recite this ayah together. Indeed, Allah and His angels bless the Prophet. O you who have faith, invoke blessings on him and be fully submissive to him.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners. On the occasion of Islamic Unity Week that spans the two dates of 12th and 17th of Rabiul Awwal, which are marked respectively as the birthday of the Seed of Messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, we present you a statement from our beloved Prophet, which is so essential for unity and solidarity of the Ummah. Regard my Ahlul Bayt as the head is to the body, and the eyes are to the head, because the body would not be guided except by the head, and the head cannot be guided except by the eyes.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the right of advice. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z program. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the right of advice. It is the right of your friend over you to give him advices and to provide him with your experience in any particular thing in life. You two are friends, you two need to help each other, you two need to advise each other. They need to advise you and you need to advise them, which in this case will help them and it will help you also. So whenever you advise them, you give them an advice, definitely it's going to help them improve something in their life. They didn't know about it, but because you gave them an advice, it's as if you shared your thought with them. They had a thought and they thought it was nice and you gave them another thought. And in order for them to whenever they combine the two thoughts between your thoughts and his thoughts, is going to bring up something good from the action that they will do. So no doubt, whenever you leave your friend without advising him and he doesn't advise you too, surely you have deceived him and he also has deceived you. You both of you two will be deceived because a friend is sincere and faithful to his friend. And one of the ways to show your faithfulness to your friend is by giving them an advice and receiving an advice from them too. An advice rescues a man from deviation and perdition and from any type of destroyer in life. Because as others contribute in his success, in his academic, political, family, economic and social life, this will help them become a better person in these particular fields. Advice is a very important thing.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we're talking about the right of advice from two friends. Two friends need to advise each other. They need to accept advices from each other because it makes them better. It makes them make better decisions in life. So because of the importance of advice, giving advice is sometimes incumbent upon us. And no doubt Allah will punish us if we neglect to advise our fellow brothers. It is reported in a prophetic hadith that it is incumbent on a believer to advise his fellow believer on what is apparent and hidden. Whenever you're advising your friend on something, you are definitely sharing your thoughts with them. You are sharing the thoughts of two people upon one action. Definitely, it will make that action more complete and more accurate by just you two sharing an advice with each other. Let's say he wants an advice about a certain study. He wants to take a certain lesson in a university or something, and he seeks an advice from you. Whenever you're advising them, from the advices, you'll definitely reach into a good conclusion, and he's going to make a good choice whenever he reaches the university than when he will have made a choice whenever he was alone, because he's just one person. It was just one person thinking. But whenever you're two people sharing thoughts, it's thoughts of two people, and definitely it brings about good actions whenever you're sharing advices with each other. Sharing advice is something good. Sharing advice is something that can build your relationship together. Let's not refrain from it. Whenever you see a friend going astray, advise them. And you too, make sure you accept advices from your friends. That way, it will make you both be better people. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture.
Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to afloat. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Irshan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Irshan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Irshan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge? How much power do you want to be able to draw from it? So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time, or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, five with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of its habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape. But the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together and strung on metal frames. They are growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the the most well-preserved specimens with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In some samples, large chunks of the monkeypox virus is mutating. Virus's genome has disappeared, but understanding whether the mutations affect its behavior will be very difficult. In this regard, we have provided an exclusive article published in Nature. Stay tuned for more. As researchers at the Minnesota Department of Health in St. Paul were sequencing samples of the monkeypox virus a few months ago, they made a surprising discovery. In one sample collected from an infected person, a large chunk of the virus's genome was missing, and another chunk had moved to an entirely different spot in the sequence. Crystal Gigant, a microbiologist at the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, was called in to help examine the mutations. She and her colleagues found similar deletions and rearrangements in a handful of other monkeypox genomes collected in the United States, according to a report that they posted on September 17th on the preprint server BioRevix that has not undergone peer review. Although scientists aren't alarmed, they are monitoring the situation carefully to understand why the alterations have appeared and what they might mean for the global monkeypox outbreak. These mutations are a stark reminder that even pox viruses, which are DNA viruses that tend to evolve more slowly than RNA viruses such as the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus, will change over time, says Eliot Lefkowitz, a computational virologist at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And the more the monkeypox virus is transmitted between humans, the scientist adds, the more opportunities it will have to evolve. The mutations assessed by Gigantevore and the single-letter alterations that scientists are used to seeing in the SARS-CoV-2 genome. In some cases, entire genes had vanished. A stretch of about 7% of the genome was missing in a sample from an infected person in Florida. But it's too early to tell whether the mutations are beneficial, neural, or harmful to the virus, Lefkowitz says. If health officials detect an uptick in the number of virus samples carrying these mutations, that could be a possible signal that they are helping the virus to spread. The large deletions and rearrangements that were first reported in Minnesota did not surprise Andea Hatcher, an evolutionary virologist at the National Center for Biotechnology Information in Bethesda, Maryland. In 2015, she co-authored a study with Lefkowitz showing that such mutations are common in most pox viruses and that the majority of genes that they disrupt are located towards the end or terminal regions of the virus genome. It was really nice to see some of the mutational strategies replicated that we have seen in the past, Hatcher says. Orthopox viruses, a genus of pox viruses that includes the monkeypox virus and the variola virus, which causes smallpox, share a core set of about 174 genes at the center of their genomes. But their terminal regions are more variable and contain fewer essential genes. Some of the genes in these regions are thought to encode proteins that help to disarm genes in these regions throughout the responses. This underlies one hypothesis for why variola become adept in infecting humans. Some scientists worry that a similar situation could arise with monkeypox, which is currently more of a generalist. It can infect many mammals, including several rodent species and humans. But predicting how the monkeypox virus's behavior will change as it mutates is difficult because researchers have not yet characterized the function of many genes in its large genome. For example, although researchers first discovered that two strains of the monkeypox virus were spreading in Africa more than 17 years ago, they are still struggling to determine precisely which genes are responsible for the difference in death rate between the two, Lefkowitz says. The mortality rade for one of them, clade 1, which is predominant in Central Africa, is about 10%. Clade 2, which circulates in West Africa, has a death rate of about 1 to 3%. By analyzing monkeypox sequences, researchers are also learning more about how the virus might have sparked the global outbreak. Scientists have noticed a pattern of single-letter mutations separate from the changes first spotted in Minnesota. That seems to be a genetic imprint of the ongoing battle between the human immune system and the virus. By using data collected so far to roughly calculate the number of these mutations expected each year, they have estimated that the strain responsible for the global outbreak jumped from animals into humans in early 2016. That's more than a year and a half before the strain was detected in humans for the first time by Nigerian health officials, who declared an outbreak in their country that has never completely ended. The good news is that although the monkeypox virus continues to evolve, no mutations have affected the part of its genome